This is the Colorado Real Estate Experience, changing lives by building wealth through real estate. Hello from beautiful Denver, Colorado. Today we are going to have some different strategies on wealth building, and that is maybe saving some money on some tax strategies. We have Adam Larson with Larson and Associates with us today to as a tax expert to answer some questions for us. So how's it going today, Adam?
It's going pretty well. It's tax season, so this is a perfect time to have this conversation.
Yeah, it definitely is. I know people are definitely getting all their paperwork together, and I'm sure you're getting a lot of questions out there. But I have a few questions for you on some real estate related stuff. But feel free to just give us any kind of tax tips that will help, because we're all not just real estate people, but we have a lot of other things that we're looking for tax questions on. So what do you think the number one question you get on taxes is?
Ooh, the number one question I get is generally, is this deductible or not? And that is, whether it's a business or an individual, people are always looking for ways to minimize taxes. Unfortunately, the answer a lot of the time is no, that's not deductible. But we work around it when we can, and try to strategize for other deductions that we can take. But that's usually the largest question I get is, hey, can I deduct this?
Yeah, and that really changed a few years ago, where they kind of eliminated a lot of the deductions, didn't they?
Yeah, that's correct. In 2018, with the Tax Job Creation Act, they got rid of all of the what we would refer to as miscellaneous itemized deductions. Those are all the little things, for instance, like you're working at a home office because your employer needs you to. That would have been something great to have during this pandemic, where
right, for sure,
are working from home. But they did away with a lot of that in 2018, unfortunately.
Yeah, and a lot of the real estate, deduction of interest and that kind of thing, you can still do that, but a lot of times the deduction that isn't itemized is more than if you itemize, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Especially with interest rates being as low as they are nowadays, a lot of people are finding that based, again, on the Tax Job Creation Act in 18, when they brought the standard deduction up to $12,000 at the time for single people, that a lot of people are finding that they're not able to itemize, where before they had a threshold of, $6,000. So if you had a low interest house, you could still potentially get a deduction for the mortgage interest. But unfortunately, that we're finding that that's no longer the case unless you have a very large property, as well as the fact that they now limit your state income tax deduction and real estate tax deductions to $10,000 if it's not investment related. So they've really capped on that, on those type of deductions. And a lot of people, again, just are finding that they can't itemize anymore.
Right. It's. I mean, I obviously think they should. It's just crazy how we have to. There's just so many rules when it comes. But that's what we have you for, is to tell us whether we can or can't do these things. I think it would be better if we just had a flat tax thing, but it would definitely put a lot of people out of business. That's for sure. But
we're all a little, we all want what's best for our industries. I'm no different.
That's right. Well, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon anyways. I think it's going to get more complicated before it gets less complicated.
I would have to absolutely agree with that. Especially, there's been talk of a rewrite of the code like they did back in 86. I was only 3 at the time, so I wasn't around. The biggest thing I know is that they got rid of the 2-martini lunch at the time. There's been some rumors that they're going to try to do another rewrite of the entire code to simplify it. I don't see that happening in any time in the near future.
No, I don't either. But wishful thinking from my part anyways. So a lot of people have refinanced this year. So can they, what part of those, I get this question a lot, and, you know, of their points or their fees or closing costs, can they deduct some of those, or can they not do that? What's the deal with those?
Yeah, absolutely. So really the deduction that you're going to get is going to be the points on the refinance. The closing fees, they're not going to allow you to deduct. And so the points on a refi are actually amortized over the course of a refi, which a lot of people don't realize. They think it's similar to points on a purchase where it's deductible in that year. Points on a refi are amortized over the course of the loan. So if it's, you know, a 30-year mortgage and you paid $3,000 in points, your deduction isn't gonna be much. If someone were to ask me for tax advice on whether they should pay points or not, I would make the suggestion that they look at it more from a long-term value standpoint of paying points on a refi, as opposed to just what are the tax consequences of it. I just did a tax return. His deduction carryover from last year was $30 this year for some refi points that he paid. So we're not talking big dollar amounts, but you do get a deduction.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that. I thought it was the same for purchasing as so much. That's why I always tell them I'm not a tax expert when I answer their questions. But yeah, that totally makes sense. And, you know, I think, like you said, it has to make sense from an interest rate perspective and when that break-even point is on whether you want to pay points or whether you don't. And if you can't include the closing costs and all of those things in it, if it's just the points that on the refinances, there's probably not a lot amortized over 30 years because, you know, nobody's paying that many points to where it would really make a big difference.
Yeah, that exactly. And that's the truth of it, is it's really not a big dollar amount, and you want to look at, you know, cash flow type of thing, you know, of how it affects the overall price of anything.
And that's the other thing, and maybe we can just touch on this a little bit too, because people are always trying to, you know, get these deductions, and is this deductible, is that it, and you know, it even when you have $1,000 that you can deduct, that isn't just a straight, when you deduct something, all that does is lower your income, right? It doesn't really just lower your income. You get a percentage of that, whatever your tax bracket is on that. And talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect example for that is actually something that a lot of people do ask me about when they have children who are heading off to college, is tax credits for education. So there's two tax credits for it, but there's also a tuition and fees deduction if people don't qualify for the tax credits. So I will always go for the credit. A credit is a dollar for dollar reduction in your tax. If you owe $1,000 and you have $1,000 credit, you owe.
Sorry, Adam. Hold on just a second here.
Adam. Okay.
Sorry, we lost Adam there for a second. Let's get him back. Hey, Adam, sorry about that. I don't know what happened there. So just pick up where we left off on the tax credit, you know, on taking a tax credit instead of a deduction, because that makes a whole lot more sense to me.
Yeah, so the tax credit is a dollar for dollar reduction in any tax that person has. And there are finer points to it, which somebody can call me and ask me about. But in general, that's going to be a dollar for dollar reduction in your overall tax liability. Where a deduction, all that it does is, like you talked about, it reduces your overall income. So if you are in the 22% tax bracket and you make you're eligible for the tuition and fees deduction, you pay $1,000, we're really only dropping your overall taxes by 22%. We're not actually reducing the taxes by $1,000 like we are in that credit.
Right.
And so that's where I get into planning strategies with clients, is to take advantage of tax brackets where, hey, usually you donate 5,000 a year to charity. Let's double up on it this year and not donate next year because we can fully take advantage of a tax bracket with the deductions. And so that's where you get into the finer points of strategy, as opposed to the tax credits where they tend to be fairly straightforward for individuals. With businesses, it's obviously a little more complex because they have more going on. But the individual stuff is fairly straightforward. And so there's really not a lot of tax planning around the credits. You either get it or you don't. The deductions is where, where people in my industry will work with the clients to, maximize deductions in any given year, to fully be able to drop them into a lower tax bracket, or whatever the situation calls for. I'm sure people who are trying to buy a house have to show income. So when I talk to people, they're like, I don't want to pay any tax, but I want to buy a house next year. Well, we gotta, it's a, you can't have both in that kind of situation.
Right. And that's for self-employed people. So if you're self-employed, we look at your tax returns and that type of income. If you're a salaried employee or an hourly employee and you get paid with a W-2, you can deduct as much as you want, and that's okay on our end as far as income. But if you're self-employed, it's always a struggle because your job is to get the income as low as we can, and my job is I want the income to be as high as we can. So there's definitely a conflict there all the time. And I've talked to my wife, back when I had my own business, my own mortgage company and things, and it's like, okay, how are we going to strategize? Because you really have to do that if we're gonna purchase something, or we need our income to be a certain level, we're going to have to, pay a little more taxes this year than we would normally. And sometimes that's you definitely have to have those strategy talks, because if you show no income or a loss, that's the income that we're going to be using to purchase a house, and that's not always a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something where, like you always say, is talk to your tax professional. If someone comes to you and says, hey, I'm looking to buy a first house or whatever, that's where you direct them to us to go, hey, here's what we're trying to do. Okay, because you don't have to take advantage of everything when it's given to you. You don't have to take every deduction, or take advantage of every opportunity or credit. Well, credits I would do, but you don't, that's where the strategy comes in, like you said.
Yeah, and you know what people don't understand too, if you pay whatever the number, you have to pay $1,000 extra in taxes, and it allows you to purchase a house the next year. That's not a bad trade-off, versus taking your income down to nothing. Sometimes you have to pay a little more to get what we're looking for, but obviously you don't want to, pay $500,000 more in taxes to be able to do that. So, but there definitely is a trade-off there, and you just have to work it so it's correct. So it gets you what you want. That's the biggest thing. It depends on what your goals are. And that's what we do a lot of here is, you know, with our annual financial reviews and things like that. If we do need a tax professional, we'll definitely refer people to you and to other people to make sure that they are getting the right advice. And it's not coming from someone like me that thinks they know what they're doing and really doesn't.
Well, Dick, I can always train you on taxes. It's
it's hard enough to keep the mortgage rules down, you know. So, that's why I have you, so you can answer the questions that I have, you know. So,
absolutely.
So another question that I get a lot is with gifting. You know, and I know those rules have kind of, you know, evolved, and they're always evolving. And I hear talk about them changing those rules. And I know. So tell us a little bit about the gifting and what we should know about that from a tax standpoint. And then I'll kind of chime in on the on the mortgage standpoint on gifting, and we'll kind of go back and forth with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So gifting can be done in a couple of different ways from a tax perspective. You know, the biggest thing to remember is that you can give a tax-free gift up to $15,000. And that could be whether it's stock, could be a collectible car, could be just cold hard cash. Anything with a value up to $15,000 is going to be considered a tax-free gift. Now, let's say somebody's gifting $30,000. So in that $30,000, you will get the $15,000 that's not taxed, and $15,000 of it will be taxed. And what it does, and this is a gift coming from a single person, because I have to make that statement. Mm-hmm. And so what will happen is you'll file a tax return for the $15,000 above the limit, and the person who is giving the gift is the one who actually pays the tax on it, not the person who is receiving it, which is the most common question I get asked of gifts is, somebody's gifting me something, do I have to pay tax on it? It's the person who gives it that pays that tax.
Right.
Now, there are ways, if we're talking, you know, because we're talking real estate, you know, if somebody wants to buy their, you know, their children a house as a marriage gift.
Right. It's usually a parent-child thing is what we usually do.
Yeah. And so it's still taxable parent to child. But because we're talking a large amount, that parent may not actually want to pay the IRS any tax. So the way around it would be you would eat into the taxable estate of the person who is giving the gift. And that's usually where the rules change. The gift rule itself hasn't changed for a lot of years. It's really this little side thing of eating into an estate for giving gifts that changes because it's the amount of the estate. They raised it a couple of years ago. I think it was like 11 million.
11 and a half. Yeah, I think it's 11 or 11 and a half million. Yeah.
Yeah, where, you know, 10 years ago it was 2 or 3 million.
Yep.
Then they raised it to 5. And then it dropped back down with some other tax rules that, you know, sunset or went out of the way. And so that's usually where you see the changes as opposed to on the gift limits themselves. You know, that amount goes up every year or every other year, little by little, to keep pace with inflation.
Right. Or it comes down because they want more taxes from us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it come down in the 12 years I've been doing this for the gift amount. The estate amount I've seen go down.
Though. Yeah, the estate, that's what I was talking about, the estate amount. But let me give you a scenario and see what your take is. So let's say somebody gives, let's just say $5 million. Okay.
Okay.
And someone gives to their kids $5 million. And you know, that's within the 11, let's just say it's within the $11 million estate thing, right? Let's say they, this year they change that estate, to $2 million. Would that, since I gave the $5 million when the rule was 11, would I be okay with that number, or would I now have to pay tax on the extra?
So I will be completely honest with you. That is a situation that I have not encountered. But the way that the IRS rules are written, and this applies to the entire tax system, is it's very much year by year. Every year is separate. So for that, I would, my assumption would be that you would qualify under the old rule,
right?
Because that's when you gave the gift.
Yeah.
You know, and we've seen that with other tax situations where, you know, they've passed a law for something to change on January 1st in November, you know, we're making tax strategy movements because we know that the deduction or something is going to go away.
Right.
And so you're not going to be a, have to follow that new rule. There will be, like I would have to research it. There will be an adjustment that would be made, assuming that that person, let's say they gave the gift and now they have zero estate, you know, how does that affect it? That would be something that is a little more complicated.
I think it all depends on how they write the rule, how they write the law too, because they could make it retroactive. Absolutely. They could make it, you know, hey, starting here forward. So there is a lot of things, but I think there's a lot of talk out there that they're going to, you know, start, cutting into that estate thing, and you know, hopefully our listeners out there will have that $11 million estate that they can that's what we're trying to do, is build that up as much as we can. So I think that all these strategies are good, but it's just good to think about those kinds of things. And then when they do make the rules, because I know back in that when you talked about in the 80s, they made some rules, it really did change a lot of things. And a lot of people, a lot of companies, and a lot of savings and loans, and a lot of things were affected tremendously and went bankrupt because of the law changes. And so you have to definitely be on top of those and be ready for those strategies for sure. When they
do change. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's really where, you know, I receive, and I'm sure you receive, you know, notices every day, every other day from your respective industry publications. And I receive the same. And so, you know, we get rumors what tax courts are saying about certain things. And, you know, when I have an update for a tax law because of a court ruling or something that may affect one of my clients, I will reach out to that client to let them know, to be on the lookout for this, and we need to have a conversation. Sometimes it's a very large change, like what happened in 2018. The firm that I was at the time, we sent an email out that was, hey, everybody, be on the lookout, because in 2018, they changed the tax brackets, but they also adjusted the withholding tables. So a lot of people were finding that they owed at the end of the year, even though they paid less in taxes overall. And so that's kind of where, you know, keep in touch with your tax professional or have someone who will reach out to you when, you know, something like that's going to affect you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about Larson and Associates, and kind of what is your typical client, and what are you looking for, and what can you help our listeners with if they need anything?
Yeah, absolutely. I am a full top to bottom, full stop accounting job. I do everything from bookkeeping, individual taxes, and businesses. Main focus is on the business, because that's really where tax planning can be done. As I'm sure some of your listeners know, that if you just have a W-2 and you own a house and you have some investments, there's really not a lot of tax planning or strategizing. It's more so we're going to do tax projections, where with the business, we can do a little more strategizing of, yeah, you should buy this piece of equipment this year, or, you know, hold off on it because we don't really need the deduction this year because the business, you know, has a loss or something like that. So I tend to focus a little bit more on business clients, but I do individuals as well. But that's pretty much, you know, kind of what I do as far as, you know, industries. I love being on this podcast because I love working with real estate investors, and that's both residential investors and commercial investors, to help them, you know, with the structure of, you know, commercial real estate. You see waterfalls, less so in residential, but, you know, understanding all those things. And so that's kind of a niche that I found that I'm very good at. And the other being the flip side of the real estate industry, which is the construction industry. I've worked with construction clients in the past, and I love working with them, just because I know how important that industry is to the country as a whole. And I love the smaller contractors, you know, who are building one or two houses here and there, you know, doing commercial projects, just to help them better understand their numbers so they can take their business and grow, and then I can grow along with them. So those are kind of the two industries that I found I work particularly well in, and that I love working with the people who are in those industries as well. Just they kind of, a lot of them are very down to earth people, which is nice.
Yeah, it's great. And I think that a lot of our listeners are buying investment properties right now. And, you know, that's kind of the long term, is to, you know, buy a property, you know, live in it for a year or two, and then move up and get, you know, make that one into a rental, and or just go out and buy a couple rentals. And I think once you get to one or two rentals, then they could probably wouldn't hurt to talk to a tax advisor on some of the things that you can, expenses that you can write off on those rentals, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And even with one rental, sometimes it's worth it to reach out to someone just to ask those questions. Excuse me. Just on, like, because there can be a big difference between redoing my kitchen entirely or the counter broke and I just have to, and I'm just replacing the countertop. Those two things can be treated entirely differently. One is a capitalization that gets written off over a long term, and the other is just a repair, which you get the immediate deduction. And working with new investors, those are usually the questions that I get from them is, well, what is deductible and what do I have to, you know, hold on to for like the major improvements, and where's that line? And that's, you know, that's usually the first question I get when someone buys their first real estate investment property is, you know, can I deduct the mileage going there? You know, I replace a toilet, you know, those kinds of things. And then once you start getting multiple residences, then it really is a larger strategy of, you know, of being a real estate professional. Real estate is one of those areas in tax law that gets a little crazy because there are people who, you know, have one or two rentals and they lose money on it. Can they take those losses? And the question, the answer is, it depends. The IRS rules on real estate are pretty finite. They haven't been changed in a very long time, as far as I know. And it's because they don't want a casual investor creating a $20,000 loss and taking it against, you know, a $200,000 W-2. They're not going to allow that. There's there's all these weird little rules when it comes to real estate. And so I would say even with one, it is worth it to reach out to somebody, at least so you understand, you know, what those rules are.
Definitely.
Of, you know, what do you need to keep track of? You know, what's big, what's not? You know, a general tax planning with that, like I tell my clients, is, you know, cash positive, tax loss is how I put it to my clients, is what we want from residential real estate.
Right. For sure. No, that sounds great. When you were talking, I did come up with another question. So a lot of people are renovating their houses. I did a big renovation this year, in the 2020, you know, in the pandemic stuff. And I know a lot of my clients have done the same thing and pulled money out of their house to redo their kitchen or to redo the bathrooms or things like that. So, those expenses are I don't think are deductible, you know, from your taxes, but you can add those to your cost basis when you do sell your house, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And that applies both for rental and personal residences as well. Is it increases the basis of it for any of those large major projects. So I had a client recently who bought a house 30 years ago, had lived in it, and was subject to actually having to pay tax on the sale of her primary residence because she was over the forgiveness amount. And so we started going back through, okay, when did you redo the kitchen? Oh, I redid it 5 years ago. How much? Okay. You know, and all those little things. And so we got her just to under the limit of what a taxable gain would have been by just keeping track of all those things and adding it up. It's not one of those things that I tell my clients that, you know, you need to keep receipts for. Nobody keeps a receipt from 10 years ago when they bought new cabinets and a granite countertop. But if you're
my wife does. Yeah.
But she's probably an accountant's best friend.
Yeah, she is. Yep. And she is an accountant, by the way, you know. But, yeah, that's right. But yeah, I think, and so what do you do? Just kind of keep a spreadsheet or just kind of keep an idea of what you paid? And it has to make sense, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, if you're like, oh, I put $100,000 into the kitchen, and you've been to that person's house and you're like, no, you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, a $50,000 house, you put $100,000 in the kitchen, that won't add up, right?
Exactly. You know, if it's one of those things where you can show me like, well, look, I added a kitchen to my outdoor dining area. Okay, now we're talking. That makes sense.
Right.
But yeah, just a general ballpark of things will suffice, because you can show that the work was done. Right. You know, being in real estate, I'm sure, and we've all walked in to a house where we're like, was this last updated in the 60s?
Right.
You know, yep. It's very easy to tell when work has been done and, you know, how much,
right,
based on before, after photos or anything like that. But yeah, just a ballpark idea of those things. You know, what the overall cost is. You don't have to keep track of every little faucet and, right, you know, everything. We're just talking those large projects. Like I recently redid my interior. So, you know, kitchen, bathroom.
Right.
Okay, great. I've kind of kept track of what the whole thing cost me. And I've got a ballpark idea when I go to sell. Well, yeah, there it is.
Yeah. Awesome. So you said major projects. Is that $1,000, $5,000? What's kind of what do you kind of consider that being, the dollar wise, to keep track of?
You know, again, it just kind of depends on it. You know, maybe someone wanted to redo the bathroom and all they got around to doing was a new bathtub. You know, something like that. You know, you did it this year, you finished the rest of the bathroom in 5 years. You know, yeah, I redid the bathroom. Here's the overall cost of it.
Gotcha.
And I would kind of look at it less from a dollar standpoint and more so from a, what was the project? Gotcha. You know, if I was,
that makes sense.
You know, repainting cabinet doors, taking the old cabinets out, new cabinets, new countertop. Okay, yeah, we're talking.
Yeah, but it's just kind of like what we talked about at the beginning on deductions and things. If you, you know, if you have a $500 deduction over 10 years, that's really, or cost basis increase, that's really not going to get you much, you know, versus a $15,000 cost basis increase. That's going to make a little bit more of a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, to be completely honest, a lot of the time when I have clients sell their personal residence, we're not anywhere close to it being a taxable sale. And that is $500,000 gain for married filing joint or $250,000 for single married filing separate. So most people don't. Don't get into that. This one instance with my client, she had bought a house in Denver 30 years ago and is finally moving out of it. And so you can imagine what that real estate did. And so a lot of the times I won't even have to ask a client for it because we're not approaching a taxable gain.
Yep.
Where on the, any of the real estate stuff, you know, one, I tell them it's real estate, you know, you're investing, keep track of all of that stuff for the, if you're renting it, you know, whether it's a toilet or, you know, just a shower door or something, keep track of all of it. And then, you know, if you have a tax professional, give them the information, you know, let them kind of be able to look at it. Cause if I see, hey, you bought a new toilet, but I don't see that you bought tile, a new bathtub and stuff like that, I'll take the deduction this year for the toilet, where the rules say if I redid the whole bathroom, okay, what was the cost of it? $1,000? I don't really care. $5,000? $6,000? Okay, yeah, but that's the project, you know?
Yeah, and so, with appreciation going the way it's going, we might have to worry more about that $500,000, those limits. And but the other thing is if they reduce those limits in the future too. So it is a good practice to just, you know, have something on your computer or on a notebook or whatever that you just keep track of your major projects every year when you're doing your taxes. Hey, what do we do to the house this year? And just kind of throw that in a file. So when you do sell, you're able to, you know, to have those there. But yeah, it doesn't apply to everybody. But if you keep your house long term, and it definitely can have an effect for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, Adam, I appreciate. How can people get a hold of you if they have some tax questions?
Absolutely. People can either reach me by phone, which is 720-588-9600, or they can go to my website and reach out to me through there, which is www.larsonandassociates.com.
Awesome.
And those are usually the best ways to reach out to me.
And also, if you want to text in to 720-650-6440 and type in the word tax, I will send you Adam's information, and it will come directly to you. So the word tax to 720-650-6440. You can always, if you have any real estate related questions, you can text me at that number also, 720-650-6440. We'll be happy to answer any questions that you have. And if you need to get pre-approved, you can text apply to that number, 720-650-6440, and we'll be happy to help you out any way that we can. So thank you very much, Adam, for doing this, and look forward to doing this in the future.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure, and looking forward to doing some more of these in the future with you as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, this is the Colorado Real Estate Experience. Have a great week, and we will be with you next week.